Hello there, I'm Coach Claire Akers, ex-employee and corporate girl turned business owner and coach. I'm the founder of Adesse and the creator of Audacity, the 8-step leadership transformation program. My small but mighty business is 100% focused on working with brave leaders and entrepreneurs on their authenticity and mindset so they can think big and live extraordinary lives. You're listening to the Adesse Audacity podcast. It features interviews with inspiring, authentic leaders, my best leadership coaching tips, and advice from industry experts on how to grow and scale a values-led company. I thought long and hard about whether to release this series during this testing period, and ultimately decided that the best way I can serve my community is by showing up and helping them be the best that they can be. Although we recorded a lot of the content prior to coronavirus, a lot of the themes we discuss are incredibly relevant for today: resilience, mindset, and showing leadership in tough times. So, maybe you're an entrepreneur or business leader of a fast-growing company who's excited to scale but wants to do it in the right way. Or maybe you're an aspiring leader looking for some inspiration. Whatever your situation, if you intend to be an extraordinary leader, you're in the right place. Ready? Let's jump in. So today I am with Anna Sutton, who is co-founder of The Data Shed. Anna, thank you for joining me.
Very welcome. Thank you for having me.
And could you start off by giving us an overview of your background and how you got to be where you are today, if you would?
Sure. So it's quite a lengthy background. So I went to university and did a Bachelor of Science in Management Science, no less, a few years ago now. And when I left university, I looked at graduate placements and I decided that that wasn't for me. So what I've done over the last 20 years is move around lots of different businesses to try lots of different things, always with a marketing stream to them. But for the first 10 years of my career, I worked both in-house in clients' marketing departments and in marketing agencies. Mm-hmm. And what that's done is really give me an amazing background of ways to do things and ways not to do things since I've started the business here. I think one of the things that was really important to the success of the Data Shed, which is where I now work and I'm co-founder of, was actually looking at the way that the agency model worked, the marketing agency model worked. So I learned all sorts of things in the marketing agency world. I learned how to look after clients, what client service looked like, what a P&L was, how to produce things like weekly work in progress reports, understand client communication, what's important to clients. And while the Data Shed is very much a tech business, it is still very much a relationships business. So we work mm-hmm. with clients on how to solve their data problems. And that's just, it's a flip of how we solve a marketing problem. So lots of the learnings that I got from my early career have become really useful to me in the last 3 or 4 years while we've been working with the Data Shed. So my pathway was in marketing. I worked in marketing for 13 years. And obviously a big part of marketing is actually understanding data and analysing data to drive insight and segmentation and make sure that anything you're doing is actually working. So mm-hmm. that's an important thing. If you're spending money, you need to drive some return. So I got quite into understanding data as part of that world. And then when I was made redundant from my last job before this one, at 8 months pregnant, Ed and I both decided that it was time to set something up together, which was very much around understanding how businesses worked, understanding the data problems that exist within them, and helping those businesses drive value from the data. So all of the things that I've learned in my career have kind of culminated into building a business that helps solve problems that I've been on the receiving end of on a number of occasions in a number of different places. So it's been a really interesting journey, and it's taken me quite a long time to actually realise that actually this is a relationships business that is in the tech world, and actually I can do that because I've done that before. So one of the things that happened when we moved into the data shed and I came back to work after having two children and started working full time in my own business for the first time, which was quite weird, I had quite a lot of imposter syndrome because I knew that I'd be working with a whole tribe of technical people who were fascinating, incredibly intelligent, but all spoke a language that I didn't understand. And that really intimidated me in terms of how would I win over the respect of such an immensely clever bunch of people. And I think one of the things that I've worked really hard on is actually using my skill set and taking what could have been perceived as my weakness in terms of my lack of understanding and actually using that as my strength. Mm-hmm. And actually, right, well, I don't understand this, but that is okay because actually most of our clients won't understand this either. And what I can do is step in and make sure that they do understand that and I can make them comfortable, or I can ask the stupid questions so they don't have to make sure that they do really have a good understanding of what it is that we can do and what we can deliver for them. And I think that's a fairly common theme in terms of the people that I have spoken to when they are struggling with something. Actually, you can either look at it as a weakness or you can look at actually what benefit that weakness can bring to you in terms of what
sort of where's the competitive advantage.
Yeah, how it can help you look at something differently. Mm-hmm. So while it might be perceived as a weakness because you don't necessarily fall into the cookie cutter idea of what that role should be, actually what it does do is it gives you a different difference of opinion and a different way of looking at things, and actually that's a really valuable thing. Because if everyone thinks the same way, you're never going to get anywhere different, are you? So I think that's been a big part of my journey in the last couple of years. So I've just completely rambled on and not answered your question at all, but that's been my journey.
So there is so much interesting stuff on there I'm dying to unpick, so we're going to start at the beginning if that's okay.
That's fine.
So take me back to when you mentioned Ed as your co-founder is also your husband.
He is, yeah.
Take me back to the moment when you thought, actually, this idea's got legs, let's work together. What was that like?
Well, I think the thing that was really... Ed and I worked together. That's how we actually met. We worked in a team called Value Management. And actually what the business we worked for had done was go, right, we're going to combine all the marketing teams, the data and analytics teams, the credit and risk specialists, and we're going to give them the remit to drive value for this business. Mm-hmm. And it was... I think there were a lot of lessons that we learned there that we've really taken forward into this business. Mm-hmm. Because it was taking lots of very disparate skill sets and putting them together and giving them a really kind of almost like we were on a spectrum of different, very different skill sets, but we were glued together in one joint purpose. And actually, if we're looking to drive value for that business and for its customers, how are we going to glue together marketing and data and analytics and data science to really drive that forward? Mm-hmm. And that was 10 years ago. And it was quite a different way of looking at things. And we both learned a lot from that. And actually, when I moved on to a different business to be a marketing manager elsewhere, mm-hmm. and had none of that support, it really hit home to me just how valuable that was. So when I was made redundant from that business, we thought, actually, with our powers combined, because Ed's very much from a technical background and I'm from the marketing background, with our mm-hmm. powers combined, we can actually look to drive that same value for businesses in Yorkshire. So in terms of how we cooked up the plan, it was probably done at about 3 a.m. while feeding the baby and thinking this was actually a really good idea.
There's got to be a better way.
There's got to be a better way than this. And one of the things that we're both children of entrepreneurs, my dad had his own business, Ed's dad had his own business. Okay. So it's something that we've both always quite wanted to do. And also it's quite normal for us because mm-hmm. that was just...
So you've had those role models.
Yeah, that is just what happened. You know, my dad just... disappeared for 10 years of my life, actually. He was around, obviously, but he worked really hard to build his business. And I heard just the general business chatter going on in the background and at the table, and that was just normal for me. And I think that's really helped. And the same for Ed. So actually taking that risk didn't feel like as much of a risk as it maybe would have done if we'd never seen that before.
Oh, that's interesting.
So we'd always had conversation about whether we wanted to do our own thing. And actually when I was married redundant the second time and we had a pot of money that meant that we could pay our mortgage for 6 months, it seemed like the ideal opportunity, even with two children under two, to just go ahead and do that. So That was our motivation. And the other motivation was that we really wanted the flexibility to spend time with the family. Mm. I mean, with two really young children, we knew that, you know, we'd probably have, well, the carry germs, right, children. They bring all kinds of plague home from school and from playgroup and from nursery. And, you know, we knew that, you know, we'd have to have time off with them when they were poorly. We knew that we'd probably get a lot more poorly than having watched other people have children. You know, that you catch everything for the first 3 years after you've had children. And I wanted to be able to have the flexibility to, you know, take the morning off to go and see sports day without having to ask for permission. I wanted to be able to leave at 3 o'clock to pick them up from school on time if I wanted to, you know, without having to ask for permission. And the thing that having your own business really does is allow you to have that flexibility. And that's one of the really amazing things that has allowed us to have a business and a family life together. There's been some challenges about with it too, but it's really helped fit work into our lifestyle, and vice versa. So that was one of the key motivators behind it.
Because quite consciously, you had, I hope you don't mind me saying, more time at home with the kids when they were younger.
I did,
and then
yeah.
Kind of stepped into your role.
Well, the other thing is, my first round of maternity leave drove me quite mad because I felt like my brain was about to dissolve and dribble out of my ear. So second time round, actually, because we'd started the business, it meant that I could do a few bits and pieces from home, and it kept my brain active, which I really enjoyed. So it's kind of, I kind of eked my way back into the data shed as the children have got older. So yes, obviously the first 10 months I was home with Ben, who was a newborn baby. And then when he went into nursery, I then spent more and more time in the business. So I went from 2 days to 3 days to 4 days. And then when he started school, nearly 2.5 years ago now, I then started back in the data shed full time. Ed had run it up until that point because you need to be around on a daily basis if you're running a business and making sure that you're there to make the decisions. And when I came back to work full time, I'd been running the project management team, set that up, and looked after the client side and the financials, which was fun, having never done that before. And then Ed said, you know, that he really wanted to take the time to spend more time with the rapidly growing tech team, you know, grow and nurture the tech side of the business, and asked me then to take over the day-to-day running of the business. So that was quite intimidating and a real stretch for me, but it was a really exciting opportunity to really, you know, do what I've always wanted to do, which is run my own business. So obviously we run it together. It's not without its, like I say, challenges in terms of our heated debates that happen around the dinner table sometimes. But, you know, we work really hard at keeping those two roles separate. But yeah, no, it's been a really interesting challenge so far, and I've really thrived in it. Although, as we've got bigger, it has become more challenging to juggle the business, the children, and the family life.
Of course, it's well, as if we've talked about previously, it's about leveling up, isn't it?
Yeah.
You just rise and grow to meet the next level of challenge.
Yeah.
It's obviously doing well because. Do you want to just mention your recent awards?
Oh, yeah, thank you for that, Claire. So I've had quite an amazing year, really. So, like I say, I came back into the business full-time 2 and a bit years ago, and really we'd never been that involved in the kind of... Ed's done a lot of the tech work on the tech scene, but I've never really been involved in the tech scene in Leeds before. So I went ploughing headfirst into the tech side of the tech Leeds scene, not the digital festival from this year, but the one before. Met loads of amazing people, found Lean In Leeds, which is really my tribe. Absolutely love the ladies of Lean In Leeds. It's been a really huge support in terms of meeting new people and just feeling like there are others out there like me dealing with the same kind of pressures as me. And yeah, this year at the digital festival, I was very privileged to win Entrepreneur of the Year as part of the Digital Festival. Thank you. And then I won the same award at the Yorkshire Post Awards a couple of weeks ago. And then I won the Emerging Entrepreneur Leader at Business Desk Awards last week. So it's been an incredibly successful year for me personally. I think what I find quite difficult with that is that it's been me that's been recognised and while I am very proud of my achievements, I'm proud of our achievements as a team. But often you're not allowed to, well, you're not allowed to enter these things as a double act. I'm really proud of my personal achievements, but I'm really, really proud of is actually that we've built this amazing business that's given me that platform to be able to go out there and do that. So, yeah. I mean, that's really cool. And I've told that it's his turn next year.
So, two important things you mentioned there, finding your tribe
yep.
and role modelling.
Yep.
Here's a question. So, you talked about you and Ed's parents being entrepreneurs
yep.
and sort of having that as normal conversation mm-hmm. when you're at home. What do you think your boys think about you?
Oh, they're generally quite unhappy with me at the minute because I don't feel like I've been home for about 3 weeks. My boys have never really known any different. Mm. I mean, when I was home full time, I mean, they can't remember that. I mean, that's a long time ago now. They know that I'm there for them. They know that I'm there and I pick them up at all. Deeply unhappy about how much homework club they have to go to, but actually it means that I don't have to have their homework arguments at home, so I'm really cool with that as an option.
Always a win.
Yep, always a win. What do my boys think of me? I just think they think it's dead normal to have a mum that works.
Do you think they'll set up businesses when they're older because they've had that?
God help the world if they do, but yes, I don't see why not. I think one of the things that we have achieved and the thing that I am probably most proud of in terms of my relationship with Ed is balance.
Mm.
He's my husband, he's my business partner, he is an ex-chef, which means that we have amazing food in the house, but he's an amazing role model for our children. He's in the kitchen, he's cooking, he cleans, you know, we share the workload at work and at home, and the boys will never know any different. I am a feminist, I very much believe in, you know, equal opportunities for all of us, and that's what it means for me, equal opportunities for everybody. And I hope that my boys grow up not thinking, not walking to room and seeing gender, just seeing talent and skill set, and not really caring whether somebody's a boy or a girl.
Yeah.
And that if I can help them get into that mindset, then my work is done.
Yeah, absolutely. I totally agree with you. As you know, I own a business with my husband as well.
Yep.
And three children, and it's definitely a balancing act, you know. We've managed to have another child whilst working together. So
I have no idea how you've done that.
Something is working.
Well. Yep.
Yeah, but it's not without its challenges, of course. I totally believe in meritocracy. We've got a lot of systems and processes in place to make both the
office. I've heard about your CALAC system
and the colour coded calendars. Yeah, and the family meetings. All that good stuff to keep us ticking over. But yeah, absolutely meritocracy. You know, they see us deciding who's going to do what depending on who's got capacity, which isn't very romantic.
But I have to say, family life isn't that romantic. It's fun and it's challenging, but it doesn't really foster romance.
But hopefully, like my daughter, the 10-year-old Phoebe, she said that she had to do a piece of work in school on role models, and she picked me.
Oh my God, proper proud moment. Did you have a little tear?
A little bit, yeah. It's quite humbling, but yeah, I don't know what the teacher thought of that, but oh gosh, that's a lot to live up to.
That's an amazing thing. And I think the fact that she looks at you as her first go-to role model is something you should be really proud of.
I hope so, and it kind of makes it all worth it when you are putting the graft in the office and, you know, you have had a shit day and you get home and you kind of realise why you are putting yourself out there.
Yeah. I think the really funny thing that my boys think that clients are this other alien race, because they see me, often I come into work dressed like I am today in a gigantic jumper and leggings, but if I'm dressed up, they're like, "Mummy, you're wearing a shirt." I'm like, "Oh yes, we've got clients coming in today," and they're like, "Who are these clients of which you speak?" I think they think there's some sort of different race of person. Like, oh, they're just normal people, darling. Or they've been in the office when we've had clients and I have given them the, "Now you must be very good because we've got clients in the building." And they're like, "Yes, mummy." It's funny.
So obviously role models to kids, but you mentioned Lead and Leads there and all the digital festival and so on you're involved in. Role models as entrepreneurs is so, so important. And oh God, I hate to bring it back to gender, but you are a female CEO in tech. How do we get more women? How do we make it more equal? How do we encourage more women to rise through the ranks and enter the industry, do you think?
So, back in the dawn of time, there was this world of digital marketing, which was this seen as this completely different skill set to normal marketing or offline marketing as it was back then. And what's really happened is the two disciplines have merged together and it's just marketing.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the world of tech, while there will still be very much a tech sector, I think tech will just become the norm. Most businesses are tech businesses now, and if they're not, then they will be.
Mm-hmm.
And I think part of getting more women into what is considered to be a traditional tech role is about looking at how we break down the barriers, which a big one is language, and removing the fear of the world of tech for women. I know myself how intimidated I was by all of the language, agile and scrums and retros and code and Django and Go and all of these words that mean absolutely nothing to me. And to be perfectly honest, the majority of the tech language still doesn't. Mm-hmm. I mean, I wouldn't know a line of Python from a line of SQL.
Mm.
I really wouldn't. And if I did, then I think everybody would be quite scared of that. but I think it doesn't matter. You don't need to have a really deep understanding of what's actually been done. What you need to understand is business. And a lot of women understand business. And I think it's just about understanding how where the skill set transitions can happen to bring more women in and making it more accessible for them, and about people being a bit brave and taking that challenge on.
Which is a wonderful point, which neatly brings us around to what I was going to ask you about next, which is mindset, the mindset of an entrepreneur. So I believe that there's a lot of good ideas out there. Anybody can have a good idea. You have a bottle of wine, 3 o'clock in the morning, you think, yes, I'm going to do that. But
bottle of wine at 3 o'clock in the morning. Wow.
These days, I'm projecting a bit.
Yeah.
What does it take for somebody to have not only have that idea but go for it? You know, take that risk and make something happen.
It's I think Ed and I were very fortunate in that we had a joint idea and we had the skill set together to make it happen.
Yeah.
What I often see is somebody has an amazing idea but has absolutely no idea how to make it happen because they don't have that technical capability.
Mm-hmm.
And I think one of the things that I think we really need to understand is how we marry up the people with the amazing ideas with the people who can make them happen and how those relationships can move forward, because not everyone can write code. I mean, God, I look at code and I think, if my idea... our idea that we had a discussion about, but it came from my world of utter frustration that I couldn't manipulate my own sets of data as a non-technical person and had to rely on a technical person to be able to do that, drove me absolutely nuts when mm-hmm. it was me who could get the insight from it and really use it. If Ed hadn't existed, then that would have just remained an idea in my head and it would never have happened because I would have had nobody to help me facilitate that happening.
So it comes back to surrounding yourself with the right people.
It's about partnerships, it's the right people, it's about trust. I mean, I have 100% trust and faith in Ed. I mean, well, I wouldn't have married him otherwise, but he is so intelligent and he really believes in what we're trying to do. And I think if you really believe in yourself and you really believe in the idea, then you can make anything happen, but it is about finding the right partner. Or if you've got your own skill set and you've got the idea, then it's finding a backer, because it's not cheap.
Mm.
Setting up is a big risk.
It's a roller coaster.
It is a massive roller coaster. And I think it's also about having that expertise around you and that team. So we could quite easily have done this on a total shoestring, but the things that we looked at were things like getting a really good accountant and getting a really good solicitor behind us, because it's your IP, that's what you're protecting.
Mm.
And it's about thinking through all those ideas and making sure that you think things through and really plan out what that future looks like. But don't lose sight of that dream, because if you've got that idea and you want to make it happen and you can get the right people together, then anything is possible. And the funding world is changing dramatically at the moment, and there is more money available to people, and there is more
funding.
Yeah,
we are in a bit of a tech bubble where the economy, the political situation doesn't seem to be, touch wood, affecting us too much, and
no,
it is still
and
positive.
People are sitting up and taking notice of what the North has to offer.
Absolutely.
You know, I mean, there's funding coming in from America into, you know, they are really starting to look at the North of England as a place to really send some cash and spend some cash. You know, if you can get your plan together and you can get your belief on paper and you can get your dream out there and you can really sell it, then anything is really possible. The environment out there right now is so exciting, but it is about having that self-belief, and that's where I think finding your tribe really helps. We've got a couple of people here who are really looking at, you know, setting things up on the side and, you know, tinkering stuff, and that is really the beauty of tech. You can do stuff in your bedroom, you can do stuff from wherever you are, you can fit it in around the day job. If you really believe in it and you're prepared to work for it, it's absolutely possible. But you've got to take the risk, and you have to, I think, if you're really risk averse, then it's probably going to be quite a big barrier.
Yeah, you've got to actually put yourself out there and say, let's just try and see what happens.
Yeah, but there's so many groups out there where you can just go and have a conversation with people about what they're doing, how they've done it, you know, how it's possible. I mean, there are startups coming out of universities that students have done in the spare time around their course and gone, oh, this is actually a money spinner, let's crack on with that. You know, the younger generations are really very entrepreneurial because they've lived with tech. They've grown up with tech. They've grown up coding in the bedrooms. That is just the normal thing for them. They learn how to code on YouTube. And I think what we will really start to see is a huge shift in terms of how the younger generations really earn their money, and actually probably be a lot of part-time work and a lot of doing a bit of their own side gig.
Absolutely, sort of portfolio careers, bit of this, bit of that. And
Absolutely. Which I think is absolutely fascinating, watching that change, because that skill set is just normal. I mean, my kids can code. I mean, not very well, but, you know, they can code, and they sit and watch Ed coding, and it's just normal for them. And it will just become the norm, and spinning up a random thing, a website with a bit of an e-commerce bolt onto it and making a bit of money and then spinning it down and going doing something else will just become really normal, and probably a way that people are making pocket money instead of a newspaper round in the next 20 years, which I think is really cool. But yeah, I think the world is going to change dramatically. And like I say, I think the tech sector won't necessarily be the tech sector for much longer. I think it will just be the way that the world works.
Absolutely. Well, Anna, I think we're going to need to schedule part two, because I feel like we could go on all night, but let's leave it there for today. And thank you very much.
Thank you.
So, I hope you enjoyed listening to that as much as I enjoyed recording it. Drop me a note on my website, www.clareackers.com, to let me know your thoughts. If you were inspired and would like to know more about working with me to transform your own leadership journey, check out my signature Audacity Leadership Programme. It's available for one-to-one online coaching, and also my digital course, Audacity Academy. There's also a brilliant selection of workshops available, which are an amazing way to invest in your team. Until next time, stay safe, Claire.